When the world is calling, whether it's sunny beaches, global cities, or boardrooms that can't wait, getting there starts here. With over 55 nonstop destinations, a new nonstop to Montreal on Air Canada, and 20 nonstop flights a day to New York City, Columbus makes travel simpler, smarter, and closer than you think. Start your trip at flycolumbus.com. When the world is calling, getting there starts here. With over 55 nonstop destinations, including Montreal, and 20 nonstop flights a day to New York City, travel from Columbus is closer than you think. Start your trip at flycolumbus.com.
Hello and welcome back to Pod on the Tyne for this match day episode. My name's Taylor Payne, and Newcastle are back in Premier League action after being unceremoniously dumped out of the Champions League by Barcelona. And it's only the old enemy, Sunderland, who come to St James's Park. George Colgan and Chris Wolf are our boots on the ground for this one. Now let's get stuck into the action.
Given away by O'Neill, chance here, Gordon! It's a horrible error from Sunderland that has gifted Newcastle the opening goal in this contest. Anthony Gordon, ruthless with the finish. And it's Xhaka who gets the corner across. And Talbot reacts and turns it home. So sharp on the rebound. Chemsdean Talbi gets Sunderland level. He's corner right into the thick of it. But is it going to count? As ever, there was a crowd scene in there.
It's certainly offside, Murphy. And interfering with the keeper.
It's Noah Siddiqui. Forces Lefay wider than he would have wanted to be. But he still manages to get it through, and Brobbey scores! And Wearside, so worried at the start of this match, sees those worries evaporate now with what could turn out to be a late winner from Brian Brobbey.
Well, Eddie Howe was asked afterwards about head loss and whether Newcastle had experienced that today, and I think that all of us have experienced some sort of head loss after. Try and even describe how you feel right now, George, after that.
Normally I like to try and start with a joke or something funny or uplifting, but I can't do it after that. I think from Newcastle United's perspective, that is a disastrous result. It's a disastrous performance. I always want to look for context for matches and context in a season. You know, there's no context for a derby. There never is. And you just have to accept that. But that was just not good enough. It was not good enough from first to last. It's 6 points have gone to Sunderland this season. And worse than that, it's Newcastle just not getting to grips with a fixture, which, of course, you know, never conforms to form or anything like that, but you just have to turn up for, and it's not good enough. That was not good enough today. It was awful.
I don't disagree with just about everything you said, except you said the first to last, and I'm going to come back to you and counter that in a little bit and say that I thought for 10, 15 minutes Newcastle actually were pretty good, but on the whole, I very much agree, and it's two second-half collapses in very different circumstances, but equally as lamentable, really, within the space of a few days. A second half collapse in Barcelona when Newcastle end up shipping seven, could have been more. Second half collapse here where they throw away a lead in the derby, end up losing, and with that really surrendering any grip they may have been getting on pushing towards those European positions, instead very much in mid-table mediocrity in the bottom half of the table. 22 points dropped from winning positions, now the most in the Premier League. Howe himself said afterwards it's just unacceptable. But let's think bigger picture to begin with. We now have a 3-week gap in a season where Newcastle have basically had no gaps. They've had the international breaks, and aside from that, they've played every single midweek and weekend since August. And now there's 3 weeks to stew on Newcastle, being out of the Champions League.
Now you wish there was a game in two days' time. It leaves them in an awful position. I mean, that the scenes at the end where Sunderland players are celebrating in front of their fans who are high up in level seven, and Newcastle are doing, you know, what you call a lap of appreciation afterwards. There was not a lot of appreciation coming back at them. There are boos as the team are kind of walking around around the pitch. Eddie Howe's in the front, and when they get to the kind of Gala Gate, some people are clapping, but you've got a lot of people gesturing, looking really, really angry, and that's going to linger in my mind for a very long time. I mean, yes, there were boos. You know, there were some boos after Brentford. There were some boos after Everton. That was a very different feeling. And it puts the manager bang under pressure. It puts the players bang under pressure. It's very difficult to sort of look at bigger picture stuff because, as I say, this game has its own context. And, you know, it's that sort of reminder that, you know, you have to show up. You know, when I said turning up, yes, okay, they started all right, but overall, they haven't got to grips with the two games. And 6 points to Sunderland. You know, Sunderland have had a fantastic season from their perspective, but it's an embarrassment. It's a humiliation. You know, there was that banner, the War Flags banner in the Gallagher end before the kickoff, which said something like, you know, welcome to the region's capital. We haven't seen you for so long. But what happened afterwards is a very, very familiar feeling. If you're old enough to remember the last derbies here, that feeling at the end is just, it's like a dagger all over again. And it puts the club under pressure, it puts Eddie Howe under pressure, it puts the players under pressure, and they deserve to be.
Yeah, I mean, the part of the reason behind that banner is this was almost a decade to the day since the last time we had derby at St James's Park. Newcastle haven't won in the league in this fixture, home or away, since 2011. They haven't won here at St James's Park since 2010. Sunderland are an unprecedented run. I think it's 11 games without defeat, 8 of those victories. That record's just lamentable, isn't it?
It's abysmal. And, you know, again, you know, if you're trying to make sweeping statements about this fixture, I would say that over the course of most of that time, Newcastle just haven't got it. They haven't understood it. They haven't got to grips with the magnitude of it, the desperation of it. Perhaps, you know, like Sunderland have been more desperate in these moments, but they've used it. I thought that Newcastle's performance today was strangely unphysical. I know that the game has moved on. Yes, they took the lead. They took advantage of a mistake, which no doubt you'll talk through in gruesome detail. But I don't think there was ever a moment where they sort of put their foot in. I mean, it's something I've been banging on about since the end of the game. 6 Sunderland players were booked. 1 Newcastle player was booked, Jolinton, not surprisingly, I think possibly though for dissent. And that wasn't until right at the end of the game. And I know this is like a very, very blunt, basic metric with no nuance in it whatsoever, but it felt to me like Sunderland were making those cynical tackles when Newcastle were breaking. They were taking the yellow card, they were doing that kind of thing. And Newcastle were just nicey-nicey. They were nicey-nicey in front of their own area. I was saying to you, there's a Sunderland goal in there somewhere. And I just don't think they had anybody who kind of got to grips with the fixture. And that has been the case over both legs. They just have not got to grips with it.
We'll return to that, get to grips with it or not. Let's just go through the game itself. So the match starts and the atmosphere is very good with that War Flags display.
It looked great. The stadium looked great, didn't it? It was like black and white stripes and flags. And there was a kind of, on the east stand, which of course is famously the hotbed of St James's Park. That's a joke. But there was like this kind of ferocious looking magpie over a cityscape. That was a callback to the scenes that had been at the Stadium of Light, where you were, of course, where there'd been a black cat holding a magpie in its talons. Claws. It looked really good. It sounded really good. It's everything you want. I'd been hanging around outside, you know, saw some Sunderland fans arrive. It was, you know, not great, some of those scenes, I have to say. But you have, you know, that sense of busyness and atmosphere, heaviness in the air, there's flares in the air, you know, there's smoke in the air. It's just so different to anything else. And, you know, like, I love this fixture. I don't particularly love it right now, obviously, but like, I love that. I love the difference to this fixture. And at the start, it had all of that.
And what was very different for Newcastle, I thought, and certainly the first half of the first half to the December fixture, was the way that Newcastle pressed and were aggressive. And Dan Burns spoke in his programme notes before the match. He talked about Newcastle being passive in the return fixture. And I don't think you can argue with that, yeah. Whereas Gordon being up front, Gordon being selected as the number nine, made Newcastle different, certainly up front. And within 49 seconds, he'd pressed and forced Trihume to kick the ball out of play. Within 5 minutes, he'd forced the goalkeeper. He'd actually blocked it. His clearance upfield, unfortunately, couldn't get to himself. But Newcastle just looked slightly different in that regard. And that high pressing actually leads to Newcastle's opener, which is a gift. They didn't create loads of clear-cut chances of their own accord, Newcastle, but they are gifted one from the goalkeeper. And you noticed that him and Luke and I had actually had a bit of a conversation before the goal kick was taken.
Yeah, they were having like a confab about what they were going to do. In the end, the keeper takes a tiny kind of short kick, and then I think Luke 09 is attempting to just smash it upfield. I assume, because he kicks it with huge power, but it goes very, very flat and it's intercepted by Walter Marder, who just gets in front of Xhaka. But at that point, you're thinking, okay, well, I mean, what do you want if you're Newcastle? What do you want to be given encouragement to do that press? So why on earth are Sunderland doing a little tippy-tappy kick out like that? Just don't take any chances. And it felt to me at that point that if there was head loss going on, you know, Sunderland's brains were scrambled. They were kind of all over the place. And so from a Newcastle perspective, you sort of take encouragement from that because they're playing into your hands.
It's Voldemort, as you say, who makes the interception. How actually changed the system for this one? Sandro Tonali was unavailable due to the groin problem he'd suffered in midweek. It'd be interesting to see if he features for Italy over the next couple of weeks. Probably won't go down particularly well on Tyneside if he does. Obviously, no Bruno Guimaraes, still out with injury. Actually has mumps, apparently. So he's out for... he caught that on the plane back from Barcelona. No Lewis Miley either. So instead, how changed? It was more like a 4-2-3-1, and Valdemaro was the number 10. Joe Linton and Ramsey is the holders. We'll come on to that a bit later. But yeah, Valdemaro intercepts, manages to get it to Gordon. Gordon takes a touch to his right inside the box, cuts out two Sunderland defenders and finishes a cross goal. And at that point, it felt, as you say, it felt like Sunderland had gifted Newcastle that opportunity. All of us before the game said, if Newcastle score early, that's what they need. The longer this game goes 0-0, that doesn't suit Newcastle. And it felt strange that Sunderland did play in Newcastle's hands that way. I thought they adapted as the game moved on. They changed that a bit. They went a bit more direct to Brobbey up front, who caused Newcastle so many problems throughout the match. And... yeah, Newcastle had other opportunities in that first half. Sven Botman hits the post with a header. There are a couple of... Elanga flashes a header over the bar from a Lewis Hall cross from the left-hand side. Without absolutely peppering the goal, I thought that in that first half, Newcastle did create openings. And it looked like Voldemort was fairly effective at certain points in attack in that first half when Newcastle had those gaps they could run into in midfield.
Yeah, I mean, I thought in that sense, Newcastle, it sort of felt like they were playing quite well, but again, playing without physicality, I thought. It's like, you know, they had a moment, they had an opportunity to really impose themselves on the game. And there were still, and so there were some nice moments, some nice touches, some really good breaks, but I don't think they ever had that proper control. And I think they had an opportunity to take control, not just with possession. They were, you know, they were miles ahead in terms of possession at that point as well, and playing sort of decent stuff. I just never felt, though, that they took a grip, or, you know, they put their foot on Sunderland's throat. And there had to be somebody leading at that moment, putting a foot in, making a tackle. And again, I think they allowed Sunderland into it. It felt like there were gaps in front of Newcastle's back four. And, you know, I said to you in that first half, I think Sunderland will score a goal here. It was like there was too much, they were given too much space. And so, you know, again, you know, it's not that they didn't start the game okay or start the game quite well. It's they didn't take advantage of the position that they put themselves in or that they were gifted.
Yeah, in attack, Lewis Hall was playing really well early on, same with Voldemort. But as you say, it just felt in the first half, Sunderland didn't have loads of real opportunities. Talby forced a save from Ramsdale, where Ramsdale used his feet well to get across and then clawed away. But beyond that, it wasn't like Sunderland had loads of chances, but they had quite a lot of territory when Newcastle were dropping very deep when Sunderland had the ball. And then you went to half time and you were thinking, right, Newcastle are ahead. They're attacking towards the Gallagher in the second half. Yes, they've played that exhausting match during midweek, but hopefully this is the moment that Newcastle kick on. And then the second half was basically Newcastle just did not get started, did they?
They did not get started. And in those terms, it was reminiscent of Barcelona, that suddenly their legs look heavy and, you know, they can't sort of do anything at that point. And sort of, you know, substitutes come on, they're not really changing the game. And it's not having an impact now. Like, okay, I'll say something now that will have people shouting. That fatigue just looks deep-seated at the moment. That, you know, Barcelona, so if something goes against you, the legs suddenly give way. Now, before people throw their phones or whatever it is into the river, there is a counterpoint to this, which is that Sunderland were without, you know, Sunderland don't have the same fatigue because they're out of the cups. You know, they haven't had that run. They've got one focus this season. They were missing 4, 5, 6 really big players for them today. So
Newcastle without players, I accept the point. Newcastle were without big players.
No, absolutely. Of course they were. I'm not saying that, but there's just no excuse in this game. You can't look for excuses. You can't grasp at anything. It's, as I said at the start, I always want to. I want to give mitigation and I want to give a context, but it's basic stuff. And it just looked like their legs went and then it looked like their heads went. And it's the same, you know, it's an absolute disastrous 3 or 4 days. And there's no getting away from that.
Sven Botman goes down with a head injury, forced off with a concussion, so Malik Chow comes on actually as a concussion substitute in the 54th minute. At that exact moment as well, the referee comes across and explains something to the benches and also security in the ground. There has been an alleged incident of racist abuse towards Gitruder, I think, if that is proven to be the case, and that's absolutely horrendous. And Newcastle have said they're going to fully investigate that and that they will not accept any form of racist abuse.
Pathetic. Yeah. It's absolutely pathetic. I always want this match to kind of bring out the best of both clubs, bring out the best of both fans. And yeah, obviously, if there's an investigation going on, that should go on. But I mean, that is shameful if that's happened. And I hope that whoever did it, if they indeed have done it, get discovered, found out and kicked out of the stadium and aren't allowed to come back and watch matches. It's despicable. It's disgusting. There's no place in that. Newcastle have a proud history of having black players and, you know, imagine how they would feel about that. Just,
I totally concur. And yeah, so, but getting back to the action itself, so Newcastle, they don't start the second half well. It comes in the 57th minute when they actually concede, and it's a Xhaka corner into the box. Ramsdale with a sort of flat half punch of that to the edge of the area. Trey Hume then puts it back to the back post. Diarra then puts it back into the centre, and Talby finishes to equalise. And that just seemed to really suck the life out of Newcastle. I thought a bit out of the stadium as well. It almost felt like maybe this is happening again. I don't know how you felt after that, but it's sort of just, we turned each other quite a lot over the course of the next half an hour and just said, Sunderland are going to win this.
Yeah, that's how it felt. Newcastle just couldn't get going. They couldn't find any momentum. There was very little spark. Changes made, you know, 5, 6 subs happen in the end.
Makes a triple sub in the 65th minute, which is to bring Trippier off. Livramento comes on. Joe Willock comes on for Voldemort. He shifts to the sort of 4-3-3 to try and wrestle something back. And Jacob Murphy comes on for Anthony.
Yeah, and well, you just don't feel like anything's changing in that sense. Like, you want the pendulum. You want something like that to happen and the pendulum to shift. It just didn't at all. It felt, I don't want to say it felt inevitable, but Newcastle just lost any grip of the game. They weren't controlling it. It didn't feel like they were going to score again. And, you know, we've all seen this before. And so, you know, does it kind of become a self-fulfilling prophecy? Perhaps. It's just, you know, from their perspective, it's just incredibly disappointing. And I'm trying to think of the right word, you know, but it's shocking, really. It is shocking.
I mean, Newcastle's only real opportunity where they get a shot on target in the second half, Gordon has a couple of yards, which I'll come on to, but is from a corner when Lewis Hall whips the ball in, Malik Chow heads in at the near post, but Jacob Murphy stood in front of the goalkeeper, and there is a VAR check inside the ground. I mean, I thought it was a goal to begin with. There's a VAR check, which comes up on the screen as it's a foul. I suppose you could argue he's fouling the keeper, but also he was clearly in an offside position, Jacob Murphy, in front of the keeper. So that goal's disallowed. And Gordon has these two big chances. I mentioned Willick puts him through at one stage, sort of a cross-field ball. Gordon's on the left-hand side of the box, cuts in his right foot, skies it, another chance which he does something very similar with, and it just felt like, again, as well as he maybe has played as centre forward, he isn't necessarily an out-and-out finisher, he's not an out-and-out striker, and that's where the shortcomings come in. Willasula sent on for Harvey Barnes in 76 minute. Harvey Barnes hadn't really done that much. Gordon goes out left at that point. Then Johan Wisser comes on in the 89th minute, which A, shows the desperation, because that was the he hasn't started any of Newcastle's last 15 games up front. And for me, I think that shows where Newcastle are at the moment. The what is so damning about them is at both ends of the pitch, and arguably the two most important positions, a goalkeeper and centre forward, Newcastle don't have who you would have thought should be their first choice player in each of those positions. And not because the other players are making such irrefutable cases to be in the starting 11. Aaron Ramsdale's starting because Nick Pope has been making a lot of mistakes, yet they think Nick Pope is the better goalkeeper. Anthony Gordon starting through the middle. Yes, he scored some important goals and he leads the press, but basically because Nick Voldemort is stylistically unsuited to the side and Johan Wisser is so far off it. And I just think that shows where Newcastle are at the minute. In those two key positions where you win and lose football matches, they have basically backup choices due to the deficiencies.
I mean, like, you've explained it very well there, but like, you know, the way that I've phrased it is that they're a patchwork team that's like a jigsaw that you can't finish, or there's like one piece missing, and it's felt like that all season. I'm going to change the subject very, very briefly, because when we're talking about some of the stats, I mean Sunderland end up having more shots on target, and
most of which come in the second half. Which just shows the way the balance
tipped.
But then
listen to this, right? Sunderland 17 tackles, Newcastle 13 tackles. Sunderland win 82% of their tackles. For Newcastle's at 69. But fouls committed, Sunderland 19 and Newcastle 8. And there's just a lack of that sort of nastiness.
Game management.
And, you know, talked about those 22 points lost from winning positions. I hate saying this, but they're soft. And the things that Howe drilled it in the team, drilled it in the club, that aggression, the hard running, the finding a way to win, winning ugly, doing all those things have just gone. And yeah, on this stage, at Newcastle's home, that is embarrassing. And that is something that I asked Eddie Howe about afterwards. You know, I said Sunderland have had a very good season, but to give up 6 points in the manner that they had, did he think that was an embarrassment?
Yeah, I mean, it's all sorts of emotions that go into it. It's a huge disappointment. We would be looking at those fixtures as two games that we had to win for obvious reasons. So to not achieve that is a massive disappointment in our season. There was two games that we really, really were looking forward to try and do our supporters justice and showcase us in a great way, and we failed to deliver that.
He obviously sounded very downbeat, not surprisingly, perhaps not quite as self-lacerating as he was after the Brentford game, when he talked about questioning himself a lot. He was very protective of his players after this one. He said that he'll protect them till his last breath. He did say that they haven't delivered on what they needed to do this season, but he talked about being committed, fully committed to the job. I suppose the question we have to ask is, you know, what does the next couple of weeks, 3 weeks look like with no match? You know, the scenes at the end, the feeling that we all have now, the fact it's been a tough season, a difficult season, you know, successful in the sense of loads of games and loads of competitions and getting to the last 16 of the Champions League, etc., etc. Do the club take a breath? Are they going to stay committed to him? You know, what does the future look like for the head coach? Because ultimately it's him that has to carry the can. That's just football. And brutal though it is, he's been so fantastic. You know, where does he stand after this match, after these two matches, I guess?
Yeah, and I mean, after the Broby winner, which comes about because Newcastle just don't clear the ball, being poor defensively. Right at full time, you notice the sort of Jason Tindall look to the skies almost as in like, as if really just almost contemplating. It was only for a brief second sort of contemplating what comes next. And the problem is Newcastle have this 3-week break, and that's where these things will stew and the negativity will stew backing up from the Barcelona defeat and Newcastle's exit in the Champions League. It does feel like a lot of existential questions are going to be raised. I've written about this for The Athletic, just looking at a lot of sort of points people will be talking about the future, because it is that pause where you just think now you can really reflect and analyse and think the 7 games remaining in this season, but now we also have to focus on the summer and what goes beyond. The hierarchy have said all along, since David Hopkins arrived and since Ross Wilson's been as a sporting director, that Eddie Howe's their man, that they're this three-headed hydra, they're going to move forward in that way. If that remains the case, I think that needs to be shown, both in terms of them expressing that publicly once more, and I don't mean the sort of dreaded vote of confidence where you say something you don't actually mean and then sack them a few weeks later, say it publicly, but also use that with actions and show that in the transfer window this summer. Or they have to, if they are seriously assessing the situation, I think that's what these 3 weeks have to be thought about and used for, because yes, Newcastle could still recover and get into European position, but I don't think that should fundamentally change whether they believe in Howe or not. I think they have to decide now whether that's the case. They have to assess everything that's been so far. Is he the man? Can he evolve this side himself? Does he need refreshing, or can he refresh the squad and move them on? And those serious questions do have to be asked now, because I think that the mood will start to change inside St James's now after that defeat. 2 Derby defeats in a season in the manner that they've both been in. I think that although largely up to this point in the season, the home crowd have stayed with Howe, I think that after there will be little patience if Newcastle are struggling at home in the next few weeks.
Yeah, I mean, that is why today is so damning and sort of difficult. It's, you know, you and I had a bit of a back and forth after Barcelona about whether there needed to be kind of be a response to that game. You definitely thought there should be. I think my thought was more that there had to be a response to the first Sunderland game, that was the sort of upper thing that was in my mind. And that, you know, perhaps having been decent for 3 quarters of that, I know, again, you know, for 3 quarters of the two games against Barcelona, that, you know, that this is a sort of different case. But if you put those two games together where you're looking for a response of some sort, there just hasn't been anything. And it's been the opposite. So it throws pressure right back on them. Now, I'll put my cards on the table. What Eddie Howe has done for this club, to this team, has been astonishing. Of course, I want that to go on forever. I want him to be able to refresh. I want him, you know, there's definitely a great opportunity at the club this summer. Now, I say that, Lord knows what's going to happen with, you know, big players, whether they'll seek to move elsewhere to get, you know, to play Champions League football. We don't know what will happen. But with adults in the room, and, you know, 3 senior people in position, you would think that there could be an opportunity for Newcastle to do something good this summer. But it is going to take a massive refresh. And, well, it's more than a refresh now. I think it is proper nuts and bolts, if not quite back to basics. You talked about it being the end of one team and the start of another, and I think that's probably right now. So it's a big moment, and it's like, do they stick? Do they twist? And you know, what does the team look like moving forward? I mean, this was the big time. I don't want to talk about responses anymore, because this was a response game and they haven't done it. But if things tail off between now and the end of the season, it gets very ugly. And, you know, I said in midweek, I think Newcastle have to get back into Europe. And I still think that. I think they've got to give absolutely everything to get back into Europe.
I mean, we're chatting now and Newcastle are 12th. In the Premier League, they're a point in a position below Sunderland. Brighton have moved above them this weekend, Fulham back above them. They're 4 points behind Everton in 8th and 4 points behind Brentford in 7th. Chelsea 6 points ahead in sixth. It felt like such an opportunity as well. It wasn't just the game today. It was for what Newcastle could achieve. Because if they'd won as well, they would have moved only 4 points behind Liverpool. That Liverpool lose over the weekend and Newcastle can't capitalise. And so that's where it's so damaging as well. For that, do you... there's been a lot of talk, and we'll talk more about this in the upcoming midweek podcast and beyond. But just very briefly, the narrative has been that when Newcastle have one game a week, they won't be as fatigued and Howell have time on the training ground. Are you still confident that Newcastle can go on a run between now and the end of the season? Or has this week really dented your confidence, and particularly that second half?
Well, of course it dents the confidence. I mean, I think that theory is fine. But like, if you're then hugely under pressure, and largely because you put yourself under pressure, that becomes very, very difficult. So, you know, on a level playing field, I think one game a week suits Newcastle. But like, this game was a springboard. And in the end, it turns out to be a trapdoor. It's like the opposite. And so it's very difficult to like draw conclusions, because you can only imagine what the atmosphere is going to be like, or the feeling's going to be like around Palace. You know, Newcastle's away record has been abysmal.
Game you volunteered to do, and then by the end of the game,
I did do that this morning. I might be reevaluating my decision or life choices. And, you know, so again, it becomes very, very difficult. And players will be going away for international duty, so it's not as if at this point there'll be huge amount of time on the training pitch, and you've got to lift people from a very, very difficult position. And then, of course, you know, the other part of the narrative has been that Newcastle, you know, get up for the big games. That's not quite been true recently, but you know, Barcelona, there they are, all playing Barcelona in the Champions League. That's where they all want to be. Then they get to Sunderland, it's a big match, don't quite turn up, and next game is Crystal Palace away. So, you know, we'll get to see what this team, what this squad is made of, but it doesn't fill me with any confidence at this point, does it? I mean, how could it? And so yeah, theoretically, they have an opportunity. They'll have a bit of respite, but they're doing it from, you know, they're in the gutter at the minute.
Yeah, they'll hopefully have Bruno, Tonali, Fabian Scher and Lewis Miley back after that as well. But I'm not going to insult anyone's intelligence by trying to pick positives out of today. I don't think anyone wants that. I think everyone just needs to... is grieve the right word, or just accept, basically wallow in what has happened there and move on from it. But yeah, that's us signing off from St. James's Park on what has been a very difficult day in a topsy-turvy season for Newcastle United, and this very much feels like the low point of a season where there's been lots of lows already.
Yeah, this hurts. This one really hurts.
Well, there we go. Another derby defeat and another woeful second half. Where do we go from here? We'll be back on Tuesday to discuss that and lots more on Pod on the Tyne. Drop us an email, podonthetyne@gmail.com. Subscribe for more episodes and exclusive content at podonthetyne.supportingcast.fm. And follow us at Pod on the Tyne on Twitter, X and Blue Sky. That's all for now. Thank you very much for listening. Take care. Goodbye.